From World Renew, the Office of Social Justice, and the Center for Public Dialogue of the Christian Reformed Church of North America, this is the Do Justice Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Do Justice Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Orm.
And I'm Vanessa Alvarez.
And today we're so fortunate to be talking with Cindy Stover and Julian Muturia about gender-based violence, our role as Christians, as church communities, as development agency, as advocacy agency in responding and preventing it. So thankful to have you both here with us.
Yes, welcome. Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves. Julian, we'll start with you. Tell us who you are, your background, and a little bit about your work and how you got into this work.
Thanks, Chris. My name is Julian Muturia. I work at World Renew as a gender specialist. I have an interesting job title that at times can be misconstrued to mean other things, but it basically means that I support World Renew's programs and global teams in ensuring that the voice of the most vulnerable men, women, boys and girls, persons with disabilities is not only heard, but also helps shape interventions in our projects. So that's what I do at World Renew. My background is I am a human rights lawyer. Trained and worked quite a bit in Kenya and in the African region with development agencies doing similar work.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much for being here with us today. And Cindy, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Cindy Stover. I serve as a justice mobilizer for the Christian Reformed Church in Canada. And that basically means that I support congregations and especially justice advocates, people who are really jazzed and excited about justice in those congregations in Canada. I support them to engage in the justice work that they're called to. I work in many areas of justice in the Christian Reformed Church, addressing issues of climate change, refugee rights, Indigenous justice. I work for multiple agencies, for World Renew, for the Office of Social Justice, for the Center for Public Dialogue in Canada that does our advocacy work here in Canada. And working for so many agencies and representing so many different justice areas really helps me, has helped me identify that a lot of the work we do is so intersectional. And by that I mean that, you know, the issues of gender justice, they intersect and connect with the issues of climate change. They intersect and connect with refugee justice. Refugee women and girls or Indigenous women and girls are affected by climate change. They're affected by domestic poverty. They're affected by all of these different areas of justice. And so, the work I do is very intersectional, and that's sort of what brings me to talking about gender-based violence today.
Wow. Both of you ladies are busy, multitasking, doing all sorts of amazing things. I'm excited to talk about this topic because I really don't know too much about this, and I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking, what is gender-based violence? So could you explain to us, what is gender-based violence and what systems of injustice caused it?
Thanks, Vanessa. Before I really get into the technical bits of gender-based violence, I like to share my personal experiences of my very early encounters with gender-based violence growing up, because this in so many ways shaped my career path. I remember growing up in Kenya. I was born and raised in Kenya, and growing up in a little village in eastern Kenya, very rural. Then there were very few even tarmacked roads, but we had a little bit of privilege because my parents had a fair amount of education and worked for the government. So we were kind of sheltered from a lot of these violations and vulnerabilities, but that was not the case with a lot of the people in my community, in my village. And I remember being in grade 2 or grade 3 and girls in my class having these mysterious initiation ceremony that they would go through during the long Christmas break. And they would speak about having the cat and going to isolation. And this is really them getting female genital mutilation done. So they would have the cat done, and those who survived, because lots of them also passed on because of the bleeding, because of the infections. This is a practice that's really done by older women and sterilized equipment. So those who survived would go through, would be isolated for 1 month, being fed and being prepared. A grade two girl, grade three girl, being prepared on being a wife. And when they came out of the isolation a month later, they used to have this ceremony where they would have new clothes and a fancy haircut. And since they've just been feeding all month, they're round and fat. And we would be really envious as typical grade 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds wondering, oh, that sounds like a good thing to go through. Mm-hmm. But then years later, as we went to elementary school, you would meet the same girls with babies on their backs, looking really disheveled and struggling with life. And that's when it hit me that looks like what happened was really not a good thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, as I progressed on with education, I began understanding that these are some of the ways that gender-based violence shows itself in form of female genital mutilation and early marriages. But see, Vanessa, the tragic thing is decades later, this practice is very prevalent. It's very alive and well in lots of communities.
These are things that we hear like, oh, that was a long time ago. That doesn't happen. But you're saying it's happening now.
It is alive and well. Wow. These practices are alive and well as we live now. Wow. So, so that kind of then shaped my interest in this field of work and to come to understand that gender-based violence, really, as you're asking in terms of definition, it's a form of violation that happens to somebody specifically and purely because of their gender, because they're female, because they are a girl, or because they are a man, because gender-based violence also happens to men. Statistics, of course, have shown that across the globe, women and girls are more affected than men. It shows itself in many ways. It's not just female genital mutilation or early marriages. It also shows itself in forms of rape, defilement, human trafficking, prostitution, intimate partner violence or domestic violence, honor killing. We've seen even in some communities in Asia where the selective killing of the female fetus. When you have a female baby growing in you and the community, of course, prefers boys, you go through an abortion to kill that child and try next time and hope to get a boy. So it's it's one of the violations that we don't talk about a lot because of the stigma and the shame around it, but it has been shown, statistics have shown that in times of conflict, in times of peace, in any time, gender-based violence is one of the most prevalent, is actually the highest prevalent of form of human violation that exists in the world right now.
Wow. So what, in your culture, is there a specific age that happened, or is that just at any age?
So the different forms of gender-based violence really happen at different ages, like we've slightly spoken about, but I can expound more. Like with the early and child marriages, you find girls from as early as 8 years, 8 to 16 years, you find girls going through female genital mutilation and getting married. Others don't even go through female genital mutilation but get married anyway, because sometimes for economic reasons, where maybe you're many children and your parents feel, let's reduce the burden that's in this home by having some of you get married. So we might receive dowry, and that improves our economic status. But even if we don't receive dowry, you living and getting married is 1 month less for us to feed.
That's true.
There are lots of intersectional issues around GBV, including poverty and the economic status of some of the countries where these incidents are very prevalent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then for other forms of GBV, like intimate partner violence, these are things that happen like within relationships of men and women. And this is really not only in the global South, it's both in the global South and in the North American context, where you find women being abused by their partners in the home for economic reasons. You say, I'm not economically empowered, my spouse might abuse me more. Cases of rape and defilement happen in different settings. Well, from Wilder News perspective, we've seen a lot of rape and defilement happening in the humanitarian crisis or in the humanitarian context, where our international disaster response team has really reported this to be an issue that needs to be given some priority or some thought into how we program around it.
It's a very horrifying picture when we if we just leave it right there. It's a lot, and I think in order to engage it, Julian, can you tell us a little bit about the international reality of how World Renew is responding? You alluded to it, but could you go a little deeper and talk to us about the hands-on, real practical ways that World Renew is engaged in helping with this issue?
Thanks, Chris. So even before getting into the specifics of what we're doing, allow me to just take maybe a few seconds to share a few statistics just to show how grave this issue. According to a recent study by the UN Women, which is the United Nations body in charge of gender equality issues, every three seconds, a girl under the age of 18 years gets married somewhere across the world without their consent.
Wow.
35% of women worldwide have experienced physical or sexual partner violence, either by a partner or someone they know in their lives. In some countries, studies have shown that over 70% of women have experienced intimate partner violence in their lives. That's pretty much close to everybody. Women, girls, and girls together account for 72% of all human trafficking victims detected globally, with girls representing more than 3 out of 4 children trafficking victims. In mainly Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, at least 200 million women and girls aged 15 to 49 have gone through female genital mutilation. So these are just some of the statistics to show how grave this issue is, especially when you put numbers into it. In terms of what World Renew has been doing in this work, we've been working across the different regions. So World Renew works in 5 ministries, in the Asia Ministry Team, the Southern Africa Ministry Team, the West Africa Ministry Team, East Africa Ministry Team, and the Latin America Ministry Team. So across these ministries, we've been doing lots, but for purposes of keeping these things short, I'll just make reference to 2 countries in West Africa and Asia. Mm-hmm. In Asia, they have developed this program to address sexual violations for children. And what our partner there is doing, they're working through a multi-stakeholder approach, really appreciating that this is not an issue that either the home can address or the law enforcement officers can address on their own or the church can do on their own. It's something that needs a multi-stakeholder approach, and they're coming together to see what is this problem and how can all of us, each of us, take one piece of it and we together come up with a solution. It has been very successful. They've been doing that for the last about 3 years. Another example I can cite is Niger, our Niger office, which is in West Africa. And knowing West Africa and how culture is really entrenched in how they do things, the fact that it's also predominantly Muslim and one of the most poorest countries in the world, then the role of women, how subordinate women are in the community is very entrenched in their everyday work. So our country office has had to find a very innovative way of addressing gender-based violence by identifying, they call them household advisors. So one person whose capacity is built to understand what is GBV, but then it's a community member who's going to visit homes and talk to families at an individual level to understand what are their challenges, how can they help. So not even, they've not gotten to the level where they can have these big conversations. They're beginning the conversation from the home level to begin to see how some of these maids around gender-based violence, some of these maids about a girl, because the Muslim culture allows a girl to be married off young, and or for a man to have four wives, how does this affect the quality and social life of this particular girl? So there are lots of other examples, and maybe we can ask our listeners to go to World News Peace and Justice page, and you're going to find a lot of more examples in terms of what we are doing.
Yeah, wow. Cindy, it's a big picture that we're looking at right here. It's there's a lot going on, and there's perhaps a temptation among some of our listeners who are contextually maybe based in North America to think, wow, that's a really big problem that's happening somewhere else. But we know that that's not the case. Can you tell us a little bit about the North American reality? And how the Christian Reformed Church and various agencies are responding to the same issue.
Yeah, again, a lot of the statistics that Julian shared just a few minutes ago, they do cover worldwide. And so a lot of those numbers are including North American populations. But I think, you know, any of us can just stop and think about the worldview towards women in North America, in the US and Canada, and, you know, begin to understand how gender-based violence exists, to understand that, you know, we're all part of a dominantly patriarchal culture. Even if we don't want to participate in it, it's still the water we swim in, right? We're part of a culture where women are often seen as subservient to men, where women's bodies and choices are exploited, let's be honest. You look at a billboard and see the way that women are portrayed in our culture. Mm-hmm. And even if we deep down in our hearts and in our churches, we don't believe that. We don't believe that women are subordinate. We don't believe that women exist for the consumption of men. It still gets into our heads, right? If it's what you see on TV, if it's what the narrative, the dominant story of our culture is, it still trickles down, even if we're trying actively to combat it, right? And mm-hmm. So it does affect the ways that intimate partner violence happens in North America. It affects the ways that, you know, women and girls are at risk of being trafficked in North America. You know, human trafficking is not an issue where someone gets kidnapped and taken overseas. Human trafficking happens in every hotel, in every town and city in Canada and the US. Yeah. So the appetite for that's coming from somewhere, and that's part of our culture, and we need to be honest about it so that we can combat it. It doesn't take too much imagination to figure out where it's coming from and figure out what lies were being sold. Mm. So one of the key ways that the Christian Reformed Church combats this sort of thing is through Safe Church. Safe Church is an agency of the Christian Reformed Church that really exists to do what its title says, to keep people safe, especially vulnerable communities, women and children. And every Christian Reformed Church is meant to have or have connection to a Safe Church coordinator. And they're active in all of the church structure all across North America. The hope is that those individuals are able to help support their churches to be safe places, to have policies put in place to keep their church communities a safe place. Again, you don't have to go very far to hear about some of the abuse allegations against churches and church leaders. And so Safe Church exists to make our communities a safer place, but also to be able to, you know, volunteers and churches are not experts in abuse prevention. And so the hope is that those Safe Church coordinators and Safe Church in general within the denomination would partner with local domestic violence shelters, to partner with advocacy groups to be able to directly support survivors of violence in North America. And another really important thing that Save the Church is doing, actually, in Synod 2019, for those listeners who know what Synod is and are Synod geeks, they're the governing body of the Christian Reformed Church. But Synod 2019, Save Church was actually mandated to pilot an abuse of power training. And that is a training that they are starting with pastors who are newly coming out of their training. But eventually the goal is for that to be required for anyone who is entering vocational ministry in the Christian Reformed Church. Mm. And the reason this is important is, first of all, like I said at the beginning, we all swim in this water of this dominant culture, and sometimes we don't realize that we're participating in it. Sometimes Right. We don't realize that we're part of the problem Yeah. in abuse of power, that we're wielding power, or that we, you know, grew up in a culture where you don't ask, don't tell kind of thing. And so when you hear about abuse happening, you pray about it and don't report it. The whole point of this training is to help people understand what their rights are, what they're required to do as leaders in communities, aka report violence and abuse. Yeah. But also to help people not be part of those systems in our churches, and to, you know, further ensure that our churches are safe and hospitable places for everyone. So that's a really exciting thing that's happening. I don't work for Safe Church, but I work in partnership with them. And so I would say the best way to find out more information about that is just to visit the crcna.org website and look up Safe Church. And some of those training opportunities are going to be talked about there. As they're just starting it out, they're not available publicly. They're really starting with pastors so that those pastors can set the culture for their churches. But again, eventually the hope is that in coming years, it will be available to anyone who is in vocational ministry in churches. So that's a really exciting thing. Definitely check out Safe Church's website to learn more about that.
It really kind of pulls back the curtain a little bit and provides an opportunity for us to examine those structures, right? Like that's, yeah, super important.
It's really easy for people in church circles to kind of think that we are immune to these ills of the world, to the sins of the world, but you know, we are just as complicit in them if we don't combat them, if we don't actively name them. Right. So we need to do the work to address that. And the area that I work primarily in is in the area of advocacy. So working for the Office of Social Justice in the US and Canada, and in Canada specifically, we have the Center for Public Dialogue, and that's an organization within the CRC that exists to have dialogue about public issues, to talk about issues of politics with our politicians, with the government, and to actually do advocacy directly to our elected representatives. And so a lot of our justice-focused agencies within the Christian Reformed Church do a lot of advocacy work to advocate for protections of vulnerable people, vulnerable communities who are at high risk of gender-based violence. One very unfortunate example of that, in Canada, we have the Canadian Indigenous Ministry Committee, and we do a lot of focus on empowering Indigenous communities and supporting and learning alongside of Indigenous communities. And when it comes to the issue of gender-based violence, it's statistically been shown that Indigenous women and girls in Canada, although let's be honest, worldwide, but I just don't have the stats for that, but they're at a higher risk of violence, at a higher risk of going missing and being killed. There was a missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls inquest that happened over 3 years in Canada.
Wow.
And just learned and... let's be honest, they uncovered, it's not as if it was new information, it was just uncovering the result of North America's long legacy of colonialism and racism and white supremacy that has caused harmful impacts on Indigenous communities. There was a final report that was released in June 2019 that had 231 calls to justice that they requested that the Canadian government implement. And it was this big, important ceremony. It was televised. The Prime Minister was in attendance, sat in the first row, and then came up and vowed to implement them a year ago and have not been to this point. Obviously, the pandemic happened. The government has had a lot of things on their plate right now, but it doesn't mean that you just put aside protections for women and girls in the midst of a pandemic, especially like we're going to talk about it in a little bit, like some of those communities become even more at risk during a pandemic. But some of the calls to action were asking for things like trauma-informed healthcare, reviewing the Canadian Criminal Code to ensure that it's not favoring the perpetrators more than victims and survivors, upholding social and economic rights for women and 2S LGBTQIA persons, increasing culturally appropriate justice practices for Indigenous populations and things like that. There's 231. We can put the report in the show notes because I think it's really important for people to read and understand that this is something that Indigenous communities have stood up and called for and asked our government to implement, and action needs to be taken on it.
Yeah.
Some of the other work that our offices do, you know, our Center for Public Dialogue does a lot of advocacy work around addressing human trafficking. Specifically, right now we have an action alert on recognizing human trafficking, having a Human Trafficking Awareness Day. Also asking our governments to have a national action plan to address human trafficking. I've met with MPs about that specifically. And the Office of Social Justice in the US, they do have a lot of advocacy around sanctity of human life, as well as protecting immigration policies and the rights to seek asylum, to ensure that newcomers to the US are not put at further risk of gender-based violence because of detainment and deportation. So those are some of the things that my coworkers or partners of us do. I'm not an expert in them, but if those are areas that your listeners are passionate about, definitely check out Center for Public Dialogue or the Office of Social Justice's web pages within the Christian Reformed Church's webpage. So there's a lot that we do, a lot of work on advocacy, and yeah, we'll talk a little bit later about what people can do to advocate.
Yeah. Now, as we said, or you said, you know, this is nothing old. This is something current. These are things that are happening today. And then, which is heavy stuff, and then you add in COVID and the stress and the anger and the confusion and the panic. How has this pandemic affected this specific ministry?
Thanks, Vanessa. I see your helplessness, but it's not all lost. It's really, the picture is grim. The statistics don't look good. And you know, statistics represent people, right? Mm-hmm. So when it's statistics, we're actually talking about real lives that have been really negatively affected by GBV, and it's even been made worse by COVID. When COVID-19 began, or we began feeling the effects of COVID-19, already information began coming in, data already started trickling in, showing that women and girls and other vulnerable groups, Cindy has already spoken a little bit about intersectionality, but other vulnerable groups, including persons with disability, persons from marginalized communities and ethnic groups, people with less education, were getting more affected by the pandemic and were experiencing gender-based violence at a higher degree. And it just went on to show really what COVID did to the already existing GBV. It just magnified, it just brought it to the fore that these people have been vulnerable for so long. COVID has even made it worse, and it's brought it to our faces to see how vulnerable groups react or get affected by shocks when they happen.
Yeah.
The UN system has labeled gender-based violence the shadow pandemic. So we have COVID going on, but behind the curtains, behind the backdrop, is GBV. And both in North America and in the global South, the different measures that have been put in place to address the pandemic, such as confinement and physical distancing, have affected livelihoods and access to services. Thus, and this has really increased the risk of women and girls experiencing both physical, emotional, economic, and sexual violence. Because at times when you talk about gender-based violence, it's really easy to think, oh, it's just sexual violence. It's just about the rape. But also the bits of emotional and economic violence. Statistics from our regional offices in Malawi and Kenya have already began bringing this to the fore. Our Malawi office did a small study in August. And out of all the girls that were interviewed in the survey, all the girls, it was a small study, but every girl that was interviewed said they've experienced a form of sexual violence, a form of sexual violation between March and August. 100%. Every girl has either been defiled, has either been tried, someone has tried to marry them off, someone has made sexual advances towards them. Every one girl has gone through that. Data from Kenya shows that over 4,000 girls from one county, out of 47 counties, 4,000 school-aged girls are pregnant between March and now. What does that mean for the education of these girls? They will not probably be able to go to school come the new year when schools eventually open. So some of this info just goes to show that COVID, and not only COVID-19, but any humanitarian crisis or any crisis that comes by just exacerbates already the violations that already exist. So World Renew is working on a bigger project of collecting data and information on how girls and women have been affected by COVID since March. This lady, Amang, she's 37 years. She's a single mother of 11 children. We asked her, what would you want us to do for you? We've listened to you, we've heard your story, but what would you want to tell the world? If you had the world leaders listening to you, what would you tell them? And she said, dear government leaders and NGOs, please engage our young people within the community with activities that will keep them busy, like carpentry, bricklayering, or even sports and tailoring. At least this could be done per parish. Otherwise, by the time schools open, the numbers that will return to school will be very small, as many will either be pregnant, defiled, arrested, or married. And arrested because also the young men are also getting engaged in a lot of crime and things like that. She also said also, most of the women who are operating small businesses in the community have consumed all the capital in the lockdown period. They have no money left anymore. We request the government to local NGOs to consider giving us some capital for women through our savings group because we have no source of income. So that just, the voice of a man just shows us how things are in the different communities that we are working in and how COVID has really had an adverse effect on them.
Wow, that's a lot of information, and it can be super overwhelming. And I'm sure in the work that you both do, I mean, there's got to be a certain level of exhaustion. And when it gets hard and when it gets overwhelming, you know, what keeps you going?
I would say, like, being rooted in scripture, being rooted in what it is that we're called to do is so important in terms of, you know, getting up in the morning and doing this work, doing advocacy when you see governments that are completely against the policies that you're wanting to implement. When I think about Micah 6:8, you know, it talks about doing justice, doing mercy, exhibiting love and humility as part of our call as Christians, as practitioners of religion, true religion. These are not optional things. They're what we're called to do. And so it's part of our entire Christian response. It should be part of our Christian walk, our life, it should be part of the good news that we see when we talk about the gospel, when we share the gospel. So doing these acts of justice, advocacy, practicing it as a spiritual discipline, speaking out in truth to those in power who can actually implement policies that will protect vulnerable communities. To me, that's just what we're called to do. So you just got to keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah, that's so great. And I guess for us, as we listen and learn, and, you know, and Vanessa and I are right there with our listeners, like, this is a great, it's a learning opportunity from us, fellow learners.
Exactly.
I think the question that rests back on my heart and a lot of our listeners' hearts is, you know, how do we get involved? How do we come alongside the work that you're doing? And we've heard about the 16 Days campaign. Tell us what that is. Tell us more about that.
Okay, so all these issues that we've had about today about gender-based violence, we as an organization and many other agencies across the world, both faith-based, non-faith-based, UN agencies, community-based organizations, come together every year between the 25th of November and 10th of December to celebrate 16 days of activism. Or to commemorate 16 days of activism, to really see what is gender-based violence, what can we do about it? And for us, these years, we are coming together to ask the same question. What is our role? What can we do? We know across the world, community members, churches, governments, and other agencies play the fluid role of being a survivor. At times, you are a victim. Perpetrator, and many times, especially the church, we play the role of bystanders. We're just quiet. We see things happen. There's so much stigma around GBV, and we just be quiet around it. As illustrated in 2 Samuel, if you allow me, 13:1-33, like Ammon, members of his agencies have violated others. Like David, they have protected perpetrators. And like Absalom, they have silenced survivors. Like all of us, we often create a web of isolation, shame, and desolation of the victim. However, we still proclaim and acknowledge that God loves us and seeks to restore and heal us through the power of the Holy Spirit and use us to restore and heal others. So while Renew and other CRCNA agencies are running the campaign, this year to try and use the space that we've been given by God to heal and restore other people who've been violated. This podcast is part of a broader campaign, which we're doing to create awareness, to do advocacy, which Cindy is leading on, and really to fundraise, to ask our supporters out there, people who are listening to us, and really the whole church constituency and communities to come through and give in ways that can help us support survivors of gender-based violence, but also prevent violation in the communities.
Yeah, so over the 16 days in November and December of this year, there's going to be a number of different projects we're doing to raise awareness. There's going to be content that people can share via social media. There'll be webinars to attend to learn more about the work that World Renew is doing globally and the work that our offices are doing here in North America. There'll be advocacy opportunities where you can advocate to your government leaders for safer policies to protect women and children in both Canada and the US. So all that information will be on World Renew's website, worldrenew.net/peaceandjustice. Or some of our action alerts or advocacy opportunities will be on the Office of Social Justice page or on the Center for Public Dialogue page in Canada. So definitely look those up. All the information will be there and you can learn more and take action on the activities that make sense to you and your community and your context, and share it with your church, share it with your family and friends. And definitely keep an eye out for all that information coming across all of our channels, both World Renew and the CRCNA Christian Reformed Church in North America's websites and social media channels throughout November and December.
Thank you so much, ladies, for this, just having this conversation with us. You know, at first we took in the information and it's heavy. It's real. It's hard to process. It's going to take time to process. But yet there is hope and there is opportunity to get involved and to make a difference. So thank you for sharing the 16 days to raise awareness of what is going on so we can learn. Again, thank you for sharing your passion, your calling, your research with us. And we just appreciate this time with you both. Again, we are excited to walk alongside you and continue to learn and make a difference to say that we are making an impact for the kingdom together.
The Do Justice podcast is produced and edited by World Renew in partnership with the Office of Social Justice and Center for Public Dialogue of the Christian Reformed Church of North America. Our opening theme was written by Quetzal Kantla. Transitions provided by Valentin Sosnitsky. Until next time, remember that the Lord is righteous, He loves justice, and the upright will see His face.